The Lord is good. All right, let us start today's teaching by continuing from where we stopped. Today we'll begin to read 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 25. Again, remember, we just want to understand why some things were written and what the things that were written mean. He said, "Now concerning virgins, I have no command of the Lord." Now he was speaking specifically about unmarried people, actually. Now, if you remember earlier, we have explained some things that when Paul says, this is what God says, he doesn't discuss much in details about it. And then he now gives you commandment concerning the thing that God says, and that's it. And then he will tell you that this one I want to say is not I, but the Lord. Like verse 10 of chapter 7, he said, "To the married I give instructions, not I, but the Lord." That is, I'm telling you what God said I should tell you. That divorce is not allowed. If you are angry and you leave, remain unmarried. That's just the way it is. Now, later in verse 25, now he now starts another thing. He said, "Now, what I want to talk to the unmarried people, I have no command of the Lord, but I give an opinion as one who, by the mercy of the Lord, is trustworthy." Now, that one is very important. That the man is trustworthy, that is not doing things because of what he will gain. Now, that's not the main thing I want to talk about. What I want to talk about, that issue of being trustworthy, is actually very important. Because one of the things I find out is that a lot of people are actually not trustworthy. When I say what I'm saying, you will understand what I mean. Now, when I say not trustworthy, this is a man who's teaching. I don't mean the person is trying to lie. No, that's not what I mean. When somebody as a preacher is not trustworthy, it means he's saying things for his own motives. Let me give you an example. Let us assume that Paul wanted to recruit people into the ministry. Do you follow what I mean? Sometimes he will give a commandment. Well, not Paul now. As an example, a preacher can do that. He will give a commandment according to what is beneficial to him as a person. That's what he means by as one who is trustworthy. That I'm not doing this because of what I stand to gain. Somebody told me once about this lady who was working in a church somewhere, not in town here. And then she got an employment somewhere else, and that meant she would move to Port Harcourt. And well, anyway, just about 3 hours away from where she used to be, not long ago here. And then the pastor of the church was not in town when she resigned there and left to go and resume the new appointment. When he got there and found out that she had left town, he was very upset because she was a good person. Do you get my point? She knew how to work. And anybody, if you have people working with you, you will want to have a good person working for you. You know, it's just a normal thing. And so he fired her a very long letter explaining how she has departed from the will of God. When I heard the story, the person telling me obviously knew that the man was just being untrustworthy. That's what I'm saying. It has nothing to do with the will of God. I can write you a letter if I was the one that, what we are doing will really suffer now that you have gone. Are you sure you are supposed to go? No, that's. But I'll tell you, like Paul will say, it's not the Lord, it is me. I really would like you to come back. Do you follow what I'm saying? So that's what Paul means here when he says that I have no command of the Lord, but I give you my opinion. I'm reading now from the Amplified Version. He said, "I give you my opinion and advice." All right? As one who by the Lord's mercy is rendered trustworthy and faithful. So what is the advice he gives? Now, I want to rush through this because of time. And I can make the point I want to make quickly about it. Now, he says, this is the advice I'm giving. I think then that this is good in view of the present distress. That is not an eternal principle, but considering the current problem that they were having, that is good for a man to remain as he is. Now, this is what he's saying. He said, if you are bound to a wife, don't seek to be released. He's already giving commandments about that anyway. And now he now said, but if you are released from a wife, do not seek another one. Yeah, so he said, but I say then, brethren, because the time has been short in verse 28. But if you should marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin should marry, she has not sinned. That is a young or married woman. Yet such will have trouble in life, and I'm trying to spare you from the trouble that you probably will have. as a result of picking up a wife. He said, but this I say, brethren, the time has been shortened, so that from now on those who have wives should be as though they had none, and those who weep as though they did not weep, those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice, those who buy as though they did not possess, and those who use the world as though they did not make full use of it, for the form of this world is passing away. But I want you to be free from concern. Then he explained what he was saying, that those who are married tend to have concerns trying to please their spouses, but then those who are unmarried, you know, focus only on the things of the Lord, he was saying. Now, I'm just trying to jump over here. Verse 25 now, he said, but this I say for your own benefit, not to put a restraint upon you, that is, if you do as you please, he said, but to promote what is seemly and to secure undistracted devotion to the Lord. Now, let's pass a few comments on this. I like the way Paul introduced it. He said two things. Number one, I'm giving you my opinion. God didn't say I should say this, but I want to assure you that I'm not speaking what is benefiting me, or I'm just trying to make somebody do something that will seem to be on my side. That what I am saying is just that in view of the present distress. Now, that's what he's saying. And that's nothing beyond that. Now, there's something I'm trying to bring out here, because as a matter of fact, I don't believe that Paul taught that people should not marry. Now, let's say something that, you know, Paul was a human being, all right? And what was he doing? He was going around preaching, and for him, the focus of life was on preaching the gospel. And because of the way his life was, we read that earlier, he had the grace, which he said he recognizes that not everybody has. I hope you are getting my point. That I recognize that this is not something that everybody has. It's something that, you know, it was given to me so I can fulfill my function. And I want to say this, that in my, well, the way I understand it, is that he's viewing life, therefore, from his own perspective, the way he understands it. This is how God has brought him up, and this is what has been the way by which he's getting full results in life. For him, having a wife is most certainly a distraction. And it told the people that God did not say nobody should marry. Since you ask me, I feel that those who want to, let me just say this, those who want to walk like I am walking, who want to have the same kind of effect that I am having, get this point. We have things to do, and having to settle down as a married person will be a distraction. I don't know whether I've said that. It's as simple as that. It's not beyond that level. That's what Paul was just trying to explain. But he emphasized that this is just what I think, and I'm just telling you what I feel. I feel like if you want to walk, now I'm adding my own words, if you want to walk the way I'm walking, then, verse 35, I am saying this for your benefit, because you will actually find it to be a great distraction. I remember one man, I think it was Wesley. Now, except I'm mixing up my story. He was a very hardworking young man in ministry, and people just decided, and that's why I don't think we should put a rule on everybody. And the brother felt that it's good, this man must have a wife. So they found him a wife after a very long trial. And it was the worst experience of his life. He wrote a letter that woman blessed that woman, son of Satan. No. Because she gave him a headache. Now, I don't think she was a bad person. Actually, she was a widow. And she was used to having a real husband. Not this one, we know the day house. And the guy was just, and he wasn't used to being, to having to go home. He doesn't have to go home. I mean, finish preaching in Enugu, he moves down to Abakiliki. From Abakiliki, he goes down to Afikpo. From Afikpo, he just turns around, finds himself somewhere in the middle belt, just running around. And he says, oh, you have a wife? I always say, what? What is so called? So sometimes he's having meetings, he's discussing, the woman will come and disturb what is going on. That was why at the point in time, the man decided that, no, this was a grave error. And I think, really, as a matter of fact, for him, it was, you know. I don't believe that it's utterly compulsory. And that's what Paul is trying to explain. But in fact, you know, I read this man's book. Don't let me quote him. He's not a Christian. Just that there's something he said, which I would have loved to use as an illustration. Talking about that. He was just talking about a man having a professional. And I'm going to say something about that. Because if you see, look here. He says that sometimes people have distractions because they have to please their husband. I explained something before, that if you read Ecclesiastes, there was something that he said, Solomon. He said that, I'm trying to quote it. When he said, draw me unto you and let us run together. You understand? I said that the issue is, as a believer, if you have a focus on something in life and you want to pursue that thing, one thing you must never do, do you follow me? Some people were asking me the other day that, is your family Are they helping your ministry or not helping your ministry? I said, my children cannot help me, they are children. The oldest amongst them is not yet 6 years old. All right? Uh-huh. I said, but my wife, she a help. Most certainly she's a help. All right? I'll say that nobody believes in what I'm doing more than my wife. Okay? Those who have been blessed may think that they do. But they're actually looking at it from a self-serving perspective. I have blessed you. But that's a different matter when it comes to somebody like my wife. It's more of, we are on a mission. Do you get what I'm saying? Uh-huh. And so in everything that we are doing it together. And I believe very strongly that if a believer, you know, you must understand something. Everything in life is for a purpose. And I think that people should get that picture clear. A man and his wife are supposed to be pursuing the same vision, not just living together. All right? Sometimes when I read books, I'm sorry, most of the books people write about relationships, how to relate with your husband and your wife, I don't like them. Because they make the woman look like a responsibility that's a weight on you. And then the other way around also. This man is a burden that has come to disturb your life. And I don't like it. You see, he said, I've seen a woman was preaching on TV once, was talking about, how can you forget your wife's birthday? Now, I'm not saying she forgets your wife's birthday. I don't think it's a good thing. I don't think it's a mortal sin. You can forget, eh? I mean, I'm not saying she go around forgetting. But I don't think we should make it a big deal of preaching about that if you forget your wife's birthday, another man will remember it in my mind. I said, go betide the man. Let the man see the judgment of God. I said, because I've, it's an American preacher preaching and he's talking about their issues. But I said that, no, look, forget that. This, I don't believe your wife is supposed to be a burden. It's supposed to be a helpmate. Do you get what I'm saying? In the same manner, a husband is not a burden and a responsibility. Something you add, say, no, I won't eat except my wife is the one that cooks the food. Well, if I enter my house, if sometimes my wife is also, she doesn't know I have come. I enter the kitchen. Any food I find there, I eat it. And I get up and say, oh, you have come? Yes, I have arrived. Okay, let me get something to eat. I said, no, I've already eaten. I ate downstairs before I came upstairs. No, really. Really, there are some of the things. It's good, though. If your wife serves food, it's fantastic. I'm not saying it is a bad thing. But it doesn't worry me too much. Once there is food to eat, the one that upstairs me, the one that I get home, I say, okay, so nobody's expecting me here. People thought I wouldn't come back today or what? How come this kitchen is this empty? And even then, you know, you ask my wife, she's sitting down there. As a matter of fact, I have the food for me. I don't consider it something I must harass a woman about. If there's food there, I eat it. What I'm just trying to say is I am not supposed to be a burden, all right? To be carried. I'm supposed to be a helper. Do you follow what I'm saying? So I'm trying to balance some things here. So that I don't, what Paul said that I am trying to make sure that you are helped, and that's what I'm saying. And let me just, I'm digressing now, I know. But let me say something about cultures. We must be careful that we know what is taught by the word of God and what is just pure culture. Do you get what I'm saying? Now, some things are very good. They are very, very good, all right? But then, even though they are good, they may not be the way God taught it. And you may not have any opinion either for or against it, but we just know that it is what? Pure culture. Like somebody said no, a good wife always cooks her husband's food. I have never seen the Bible. You understand what I mean? I have never seen it there. He said, want to prove it? Go and read the story of the virtuous woman in Proverbs chapter 30, right? Uh-huh. Now, the woman, what she's commended for is that she's a good administrator of the house. She has maidens in the house. She has men servants in the house. And she gives each person his own job in the day, supervise everybody well, and actually goes out. The Bible says that she sees a good land, buys it, sells it for a profit, and do you follow my point? The woman does very well, increases the financial capabilities of the house. She does it. What I'm trying to say is that this woman, Mary Kay Ash, that her book, Miracles Happen, she explains some things in there. She said that they had a culture in America, I don't think we have that here, those days, the wives did all the household work essentially, and including things like washing the husband's clothes and ironing them. Uh-huh. That's the ironing part I'm talking about. Mary Kay said that, well, it's nice to be able to iron love into, said they had an expression that ironing love into your husband's collar. But to her, it's not necessary. If you can hire somebody else to iron the collar, it doesn't look different. Whether it's ironed by your wife, as long as it's ironed. That sometimes people waste energy on what somebody else can do. There's a principle of management that says that you shouldn't spend your time doing what somebody else can do as effectively, all right, as you. Somebody who earns far less than you and can do as effectively. That is not. I see that sometimes. Some people tell me that you know, a very humble man can sweep in church. I always laugh. You now go to church, you see a very big man, a very rich man. You now go to church, say, I'm very humble. Bring the broom, I will sweep. Me, I'm never impressed. I'm never impressed. Listen, if you are so good and you are so rich, there are too many jobless people who would like to sweep for a fee. So what is this one of you are bending down and depriving them of job? That is my own. You know, sometimes you see, we try to copy just form without getting the spirit. The spirit behind that statement, Jesus said, you call me master and I have washed your feet. Now ask yourself, all the stories read in the Bible, that was the first day he washed those guys' feet. You know that? How do I know? Just read the context. Because they protested. Peter protested, like, what is going on here? He had never done it. You get my point? Yes, other people did all the feet washing. He washed anybody's feet. For what? It's not nice. But what he did that day was that for them to understand that it is possible for him to wash their feet. And the reason why he hadn't been washing their feet all the while was just because it was not expedient. He can't, like, you know, it's like when we go for, maybe we'll go for this, our seminars, or even here. When we first started that day, I could carry things with it. But this is, I'm not carrying anything again. Yeah, it's true now. Ah, I can't go for seminar. I will stand preaching for 2.5 hours. At the end of the day, you want to carry equipment, you think I'll help you carry it. You must be joking. I'll just go and cross my leg and be watching the Zemeka Israel and all of them carrying load. I don't go carry. At the end of the day, I sit down in car drives. And when they get there, I will remain seated in the car. They will carry the equipment. Why? It's division of labor. While I was preaching, they were sitting down. But can I carry load? Of course. Like when we went for Abakili last time, all of us offloaded the things together. I set up all the equipment myself, wired that, because of time. All right? Because Olisemeka didn't come with us because the car was full. He came by public transport. He came, of course, naturally, because we all left the same time. All right? So he got there much later. All right? And we're not made so many. So with the few hands we had, we just had to do everything. So I didn't wear my tie yet. My jacket was hanging in the car. We ran around, set everything up. And when we finished setting everything up, then I went back. If I one guy, he came in and asked Yinka, he said, he came to see Pastor Banky, and I was standing in front of him. You know, like Yinka, the way he does. He said, you came to see Pastor Banky? Yes, he said, don't worry. In Jesus' name, you will see him today. I tried not to laugh. I was right standing right in front of him. If I were talking together when the man came, it was afterwards, because I was flying my shirt, you know, we're still carrying things and moving up, and I'm trying to explain something. That's the principle behind it, all right? So, but otherwise, I don't go carry. And I'm not, you know, but some young boys who are aspiring to ministry say, you see, a real man of God does not carry equipment. But that's besides the point. So, as soon as he starts ministry, he puts that in his pocket. He said, no. I'm the pastor here. I'm not going to carry equipment. But that's not the issue. I used to carry equipment. I still carry equipment if it is necessary. Now, I'm going to really explain something. So, that's why they said then that you don't have to spend your time, all right, say, okay, I must be the one to do this. I'm just trying to ask something that we shouldn't make. Your wife is not supposed to be a burden, all right? Neither is your husband supposed to, you as a husband, you're not supposed to be a burden also. Sometimes when young men are talking, they tell you that, no, while love marriage is too plenty. I said, well, is the perspective from which you are seeing it? Do you understand my point? So I have responsibilities. I can't add that of a wife now. I said, you don't get the point. A wife is supposed to help you carry those responsibilities. You get what I'm saying? She doesn't make it harder. She makes it easier. You follow? Now, so please, I hope you're getting what I'm saying. Now, some of the things that Paul said here, actually, you have to read them very carefully to be able to, you know, understand them. I'm so happy the way he explained from the beginning. I'm giving you my opinion. And this is my reason. Because of the present distress, don't put extra burden upon yourself. And I'm trying to explain that in the light of the perfect order of God, no, really, you should be careful that you don't become a burden to either your wife or your husband, whoever it is that you are. Now, verse 36, say, if any man thinks, now this one is a bit confusing. From 36 to 38, so I'll just read through it, pass a few comments. He said, if any man thinks that he's acting unbecomingly towards his virgin daughter, that's his New American Standard I'm using here. But just give me a second. I want to read that from Amplified to explain something. Verse 36 says, but if any man thinks that he's not acting properly toward and in regard to his virgin, that is, he is preparing disgrace for her or incurring reproach, in case she's passing the bloom of her youth, if there is need for it, let him do what to him seems right. he does not sin, let them marry. But whoever is firmly established in his heart, strong in mind and purpose, not being forced by necessity, but having control over his own will and desire, all right, and has resolved in his own heart to keep his own virginity, he is doing well. Now, I decided to read this one because I've read many versions of the Bible and there's been so much confusion about it. Somebody said that, because when you use the word, is it talking about a man engaged to a woman? But then you look at it, it is a bit difficult to, because if you don't want to marry, you're going to marry somebody else. No, be so. The people now say that, okay, is talking about a man to his daughter. But then when you now read the next verse and realize that, what is he saying? Again, when he's talking about, I don't know, if you have read this before, you will get the confusion that's inside. That what is he saying again when he says that, all right, the man should go ahead and marry. No, there's the way it is. And I like the way Amplified tried to settle it. And that's what I'm reading from the Amplified Bible. He said, verse 37, whoever is firmly established in his heart, strong in mind and purpose, not being forced by necessity, but having control over his own will and desire, and has resolved this in his heart to keep his own virginity, that is to remain unmarried, he said he's doing well. He said, so also then he, a father, all right, who gives his daughter in marriage does well. And he, the father, I'm using the Amplified now, who does not give her in marriage does better. All right. Now that one stops there because the next thing is a conclusion, just reviewing something that he said earlier. Well, let me just read it and then I will leave that and go to chapter 8. He said, a wife is bound to her husband by law as long as he lives. If the husband dies, he is free to be married to whom she will, only provided that he too is in the Lord. But in my opinion, we're back to the same thing. A widow is happier, more blessed, and to be envied. That's, these people, I explained the meaning of the word blessed, if she does not remarry. And I also think I have the Spirit of God. Now, this last statement is still in line with what we said earlier. Just emphasizing it now, not to concern those who are unmarried, but those who were married but now are widowed. Now that issue that he lifted up, he brought up in that that one of father, daughter, I'll be honest with you, the rendering in Greek is so difficult to explain. That's why you read two different versions of the Bible. They tell the one, the man supposed to be like the Joseph to a Mary. Do you get my point? Others say no, is the father of the girl. Now, I'll be honest with you, I am not so established in which one Paul is talking about, but I think in everything, it's still the same spirit that we described earlier that he's trying to explain. I hope I'm not causing more confusion than if you read it by yourself. Honestly, I'll be honest with you, Paul can be quite confusing sometimes. It takes a lot of prayer to get the point. But did you learn anything? I know I've spoken so much that you probably sound confused. That I sound confused myself, but it's not my fault. I'm so poor, right? Take right time. All right, the Lord is good. The Lord is good. Now let's take 1 Corinthians chapter 8. Now this one is very interesting. I think it will be easier for all of us to handle and explain, even though it appears to have a lot of confusion itself. 1 Corinthians chapter 8. Now please, this one will go on into chapter 10 to establish what Paul was saying. So now concerning things offered to idols, we know that we all have knowledge. He said knowledge makes arrogant. King James says it puffs up. But love edifies. If anyone supposes that he knows anything, he has not yet known as he ought to know. And again, that's actually a matter of fact. Anytime you think you understand something fully, it is because you don't even know what you don't understand. Do you get what I'm saying? He said, but if anyone loves God, he is known by him. Therefore, now, there's actually a deep revelation in that statement. If anyone loves God, he is known by him, but we won't go into it. What he was just trying to say is that in whatever you are doing, it's not just about acquiring knowledge, but about being pleasing to God. Do you follow my point? You'll see the establishment of that as we go on. And once somebody is more focused on being pleasing to God than just being accurate in knowledge, you know, just for the sake of that, then you will discover that God actually takes charge of leading him in the path of righteousness for his own name's sake. That's what he was saying, but we won't discuss it. Now, verse 4 says, therefore, concerning the eating of things sacrificed to idols, we know that there is no such thing as an idol in the world, but there is, and that there is no God but one. That is the God, the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. He said, for even if there are so-called gods, whether in heaven or on earth, as indeed there are many gods and many lords, yet for us, as it relates to the Christian, You go to India, it's the land of a million gods, they say. He said, but as it relates to us, there is but one God, the Father, from whom are all things, and we exist for him. And there is but one Lord, Jesus Christ, by whom are all things, and we exist through him. Now, what he's trying to describe here is about eating, the matter of eating food sacrificed to idols. I want to try and be quick so that I can pass my comment without spending all the time reading. He said, we have first established this fact. Paul is saying, there is only one God, there is one Lord. Any other God, as far as the Christian is concerned, does not exist. Do you follow my point? And that's because in reality they don't exist, because the church is a pillar of truth. We know that as a matter of fact, what does not exist as far as we are concerned in reality doesn't. He said, however, not everybody understands this, he said in verse 7. He said, being accustomed to the idol until now, they eat food as if it were sacrificed to an idol, and their conscience, being weak, is defiled. But food will not commend us to God. We are neither the worse if we do not eat, nor the better if we do eat. Please, I hope we are getting this. He said, but take care lest this liberty of yours. Now, this is a matter of knowledge. We know that food doesn't change us. He said, take care lest this liberty of yours somehow become a stumbling block to the weak. For if someone sees you who have knowledge dining in an idol's temple, will not his conscience, if he is weak, be strengthened to eat things sacrificed to idols? Now, listen to this. There's something that's going on here. For through your knowledge, he who is weak is ruined. Now, notice something. Here, a man is copying what he doesn't understand. That is the problem. A man does something, and he has all the understanding. When my wife first met me those days, and shortly after we got married, she used to say that you are the strangest Christian I've ever seen. The reason why she says it, because one of the things that people practiced, maybe I didn't believe in them, or I just frank didn't do them. Do you understand? I will say some of those things as we go on so that you will understand some things. Now, sometimes people will say that, and this happened a lot when we were in school those days, because the Word of Faith movement was on when I entered university and I entered the fellowships. A lot of people did things just because everybody else did it and they were not persuaded. That is, they didn't have any understanding of what they were doing. And that is actually dangerous. You don't know what you are doing. I remember then I was brought up to think. I read a book recently which I realized where the thought came from. They said the television was the devil's box. In my secondary school, the man who used to teach us Bible then, that's what he taught us. He taught us that it's the devil's box. I read a book recently by Bruce Wilkerson. He wrote the book, I think, around 1978. And he said it that TV is the devil's box. And a good Christian should throw it out of his house. Don't think the man didn't know what he was saying. That's his persuasion. He was so serious about it. Well, I was brought up like that. Then once I was in university, I told myself that this, if I want to be a serious Christian, I should stop watching TV. So I decided to stop. As soon as that day I made up my mind, no more television. I was in university. My first or second year, I'm not so sure now. My second year. Yes, not first year, second year. And I walked out to the common room to go and buy maybe a drink or something from this place. And there I saw the heaviest bros on campus with his legs crossed, sitting down and watching television. Then I looked at, what? Yeah, I just made up my mind that I'm not going to watch TV anymore. Then I came to the common room. I still remember that guy used to call him Baba Stivo. Baba Stivo was the most Jim Jim of the Jim Jim brothers on campus. You know what they call Jim? I don't know. Okay, in University of Benin, then we had terms that those were called Jim Jim brothers. So that guy is a Jim Jim brother. This on campus, everybody knows him. So it was that kind of person that I was dealing with. So here he was. He sat down and he was watching telly when I, Banky, just said, no, this is the devil's box. Of course, you can be sure that my commitment ended instantly. Next evening, I was there watching movies with everybody else. Now, it's that kind of thing that Paul is talking about. Now, this wasn't a trivial matter. It was not anything very serious. But he was saying that sometimes people copy people just because a man who knows what he's doing. Do you understand? And you may hear me sometimes I say it, maybe I should be careful saying such things, that I read all kinds of books. One day I carried Grail Message books, I read them. So let me even see what these people are saying. I had a friend who was a neighbor, actually, somebody I met at the time. He was an atheist, and I was pursuing him so he would give me their books on the natural way back to God so I can read. I borrowed a book on Christian Science once. Now, I wouldn't encourage anybody to do that. Now, you can understand that you are hearing me say, but let's assume you're a person. And somebody said that Christian Science is a cult. And you now see Pastor Banky reading and jacking the book and going page by page. Sir, it's a good book. That is, you don't know why I'm reading it, though. You just saw me reading it. And that's one thing we have to be careful about. Now, if I want to research a book and I'm carrying it out, I will wrap it so that you won't see from a distance. I don't do that anymore. I've gotten most of the information I wanted from them. I did a lot of research that, and there was some. In fact, at the end of the day, I wrote an article titled "The Supremacy of Christ." All right, some of you who started with us, when we're doing once I had these classes, I shared it with us then, titled "The Supremacy of Christ." Why was I reading all the materials? I just wanted to say, okay, what are these people even saying? Because I've never really learned it. I have learned my Christianity. I have understood the Word of God. But I said, let me see what they are saying. I was founded, grounded in my Christianity. I wasn't thinking. I have seen big men in churches who are actually inside their hearts following the teachings of Ekanka, following the teachings of Great Message. On Sunday, they go to church. They say, all the knights in church come forward. They also come forward. They are the elders in church. Do you get? No, I've seen it. I've seen it. That's not a joke, all right? And they were defending the views of Grail Message, and they claim to be Christians. You get my point. Now, I said, let me even see, because and that's one thing God has helped me with. There's no, I have not yet encountered anybody who's been so schooled in all those things that can floor me with arguments. I've not encountered. I'm not saying that they don't exist at all, but I doubt that they do, really. Let me be honest with you. I doubt. You can't floor me. I may not be able to corner you, but I don't know any one of them I can't corner that I have met. Because when you want to start talking, I say, what do you want to explain? You explain something, I explain my own. Me too, I know what you are saying. I have read it before, and I know it is folly. Let me show you why it is folly. Do you understand the point? That's why Paul was quite skilled, because he was very learned. All right? He was skilled in refuting people. Now, what is it that you want to talk? Me too, I've heard it before. Because sometimes when Christians talk, they talk a lot out of ignorance. They really now let me say something. It's not bad. Just the one you know, hold on to it. Don't go and dabble in things you can't understand. All right, if you have confusion, come and ask me. I will try and solve it. Do you understand? Now, so I'm trying to bring out something here. So what Paul was explaining is that sometimes people watch people from afar and they copy what they don't understand. That the man doing it, the man reading his Zoroaster book, to be sure what these people are saying, like me, I may have been doing. I have my understanding. I know what I'm trying to do. But the man from afar thinks that I'm learning things from Zoroaster. I'm not. If let me quote statements from Buddhists. I'm not learning from Buddhism, but I read a bit around Buddhism, all right? Before I wrote out my article. I did all of that before I finally wrote the article, The Supremacy of Christ. Do you understand my point? So that's why one has to be careful. Because sometimes people who are not strong, their weak consciences get defiled. And you see, the Bible says, that same Paul was talking in Romans, he said to him, to the person who knows what is right, okay? No, he said, anything that's not done out of full persuasion, Paul said, is sin. That is, what is not done out of faith. That's how he said it. But what he was saying is that, what you don't do out of full persuasion, then that one is sin. A lot of people do things not out of persuasion, but because they just saw somebody else doing it. And oftentimes, Satan attacks them from that angle. Do you get my point? He does. Because when troubles come, you see, this is a problem. Because for you, you were not persuaded. That's why sometimes, I'm a teacher, and sometimes I teach people about some things. It's a bit off what is popular, what everybody knows or believes. And then they'll go to another place, somebody else with something else, they keep on switching to and fro. Which shows that they are not grounded in the things that I explained. Do you understand my point? That's just what we're trying to say. Now, he now said that for this reason, he was saying in verse 11, through your knowledge, he who is weak is ruined. That is, you are practicing what is right based upon what you know to be true. So that's why he said at the beginning, there is no knowledge we are going after, but that love edifies. Yes, that's verse 1. He said, knowledge makes arrogant, but love edifies. That our emphasis is not on knowledge, but on trying to bless somebody else. Do you get my point? I remember then, I think I used this illustration before, that we had a program when we were on campus, and a lot of, we're the Word of Faith people. We had learned a lot from the Word of Faith movement, and some of the people who taught us were, I hope I can say this, I can say this without sounding like I'm condemning people. Some of them were actually quite arrogant, and that's just it. Knowledge makes arrogant. You know, today my friend and I were analyzing the American elections, and I said that it would be good for America if Barack Obama wins the final presidential. He has technically won the presidential primaries now for the Democratic Party. All right, even with the last loss he had, he still gained, because he's supposed to just hit a particular target. So every election you count, he gains some. And even if Hillary Clinton were to collect everything remaining, he's still ahead. But he doesn't collect everything. He gets one or two here and there. And so he's actually ahead. And it's almost certain that except something wrong bad happens to him, like she seemed to be inferring that Kennedy was assassinated in June. And so he would say, you are waiting for somebody to assassinate this one. So you will be the only one standing. You know, she had to explain and apologize that's not what I meant. You know, but anyway, the man essentially won. So my friend and I were saying that, look, we think it would be good for America if he wins. Why? One of our reasons is that the nation has become very arrogant. One of the problems, people like Iran, all right? The problem that Iran has with America is not just Israel and all of that. It's just the arrogance. It's just the arrogance. Now, which kind of thing is this? And that's why some people are angry with Barack Obama that he said that he would negotiate with them. But this is my personal opinion. I think, now I don't know much about this world politics, just the little I know here and there. But I think just by agreeing to sit down and talk, and of course not personally, we just send high-powered officials, half of the problem will be solved. Half. Because you are telling Iran they are not important. And you know everybody wants to be important. If the people can explode one nuclear weapon just in the center of the Pacific Ocean, just to show you that they can, they will do it. They don't want to kill anybody yet. But at least know that we can do it. No, not so like you. People want to be important. I was in a place and we were arguing, you know, everybody was arguing. And there's a very senior person there. And the point we were making was so valid. I couldn't understand why this old man can't get the point. And he stood that no matter what happens, it was an academic setting. If he has to pull this matter to the dean's office, he will do it. If he has to, I said, what is all of this? And later on, one of my colleagues was saying that you don't get the point. That let us do it like this. Let us individually go and meet him and say, good morning, sir. Sir, you know, if you say no, it is no, and it is no. But we're just thinking that yes would be good, and these are the reasons. But after we have made our point, if you say no, no is no. So we finish explaining. So what do you say, sir? He said, all right, yes. We have said nothing different. The only difference was that now we said, okay, if you say no, no is final. I said, good. So they know I have the power to say no. And we said, okay, you are the organa. He said, all right. So my answer is yes. Yeah, sometimes that's just the way human beings. Actually, what happened was that he's a senior person to us, but the way things were, we could outvote him. Do you get what I'm saying? If we had to come to voting, it was one vote per person, but he was senior. And he felt like his opinion was just being thrown away. So these younger people want to use vote to shut me up. I will show them that it's not only vote that is available here, that he will go and talk to the dean. And of course, the dean has the power to nullify all our votes. If the dean just does like this, that is the end of it. And in case the dean doesn't agree with him, he will go higher. So my colleague just said, no, this is not necessary. Let us give him the respect of making the final decision. Because the points we made were just valid. Do you get what I'm saying? So I'm trying to say something about arrogance. So some people can be quite, human beings just like love to be, you know, just show us that we are important. So I my friend and I just said that's what we think, that Barack Obama, we actually allowed the rest of the world feel important. Do you understand? They can't cause more trouble for you than they are causing right now. Because no matter what Barack Obama says, there are people who their life's job is to defend America. They are there defending America all the time. Whoever is president, CIA remains CIA. Secret Service is there. Department of Homeland Security, they are there. doing their work around the clock. They don't care who changes president. No. So America is will always be as safe as possible. That is as is humanly possible.